of you may have heard news in the last not too long ago that Betsy DeVos, who is the secretary, who runs she's the United States Secretary of Education. Let's just put it that way, Elliot. Better to be specific. There were announcements that she has planned to roll back Title IX protections, and we have on the line with us an attorney who is a litigator and has experience advocating for employees that have faced discrimination or retaliation in state and federal courts for more than 24 years. She's a Title IX litigator, and on the line with us is Linda Correa. Hi, Linda. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well, and I'm guessing you're pretty busy is what it sounds like to me.
Yes.
Did you is your study when you decided to become a lawyer? Did you decide on civil rights litigation?
I did, and for a long time I did employment cases, and over the last dozen years or so, I've been doing Title IX cases, which involved retaliation against coaches and other educators who were standing up for their students' rights under Title IX to be free from sex discrimination. And that sort of evolved into representing students and also educators who got caught up in cases involving sexual assault or sexual harassment on mostly college campuses, but also some high school.
For those who aren't familiar, because we hear Title IX in different ways, most people associate it just with sports. Can you explain what Title IX is and how it came into being for college campuses?
Well, Title IX really is intended to protect the rights of students to participate in education programs or activities free of sex discrimination. Really, this was, what blasted things open for women in 1972 when the law was passed so that women who had previously not been able to go to medical school, believe it or not, or law school, had greater access to those programs and others in colleges and in graduate programs. And then for sports, it was used to make sure that female student athletes had equal resources and opportunities to participate in collegiate athletics.
So what should our audience know about Betsy DeVos's plans to roll back Title IX protections?
So many things. this is really even slightly veiled attack by this administration to push back against survivors and the huge advances that have been made over the last dozen years or so, where the law had evolved so that students were protected when they were sexually assaulted or sexually harassed by either students or by faculty. The goal really is here to put the interests of those who are accused of sexual harassment or sexual assault ahead of the rights of survivors. So it's really turning things upside down in a way that is just sad. And the reason that it's so outrageous is that it really isn't supported by it's not something that the institutions are looking for. It's not as though the colleges are saying, this is not working for us and they're promoting this. This is a very small group of people who have gotten a loud megaphone to claim that due process has really fallen by the wayside. And believe it or not, academic freedom and free speech, which they say, compels this kind of a change. So on the free speech front, when I went to law school, I took a class on the First Amendment, and I don't recall a single case that said free speech includes, the right to say vile and vulgar things to women because of their sex, along the lines of the kinds of things that we've heard in the news in recent years. What they're doing really isn't honest. It's not backed by any academic thought, but it really is to elevate the interest of those who are accused of sexual harassment and sexual assault. So overall, it's going to make it, if these are adopted, and I hope they won't be, there are more than, I think, 102,000 comments that were submitted in response to these proposed rules. It's going to make it harder for students to report sexual assault and to go through the process every step of the way.
In what ways? I mean, so there will be barriers for those who want to make charges or file charges against their classmates or perhaps even educators who are being verbally or physically abusive to them. In what ways is there a process right now generally across college campuses? And is that what Betsy DeVos is attacking?
Right. So there's guidance that has been in place since 2001. A lot of people talk about the Obama guidance that was adopted in 2014. But the 2001 guidance, which was subject to public notice and comment, said that a school had to address a report of sexual harassment if any employee knew or should have known about the harassment, this proposal changes that so that they only have to act if they have actual knowledge, either by a Title IX coordinator or an official who has the authority to institute corrective measures. And it looks like they have the discretion to decide who is an official who has the authority to institute corrective measures. So for all I know, they're going to say, well, the president of the college is the only person who can really institute corrective measures. So if the president didn't know about it, we didn't know about it, we didn't have responsibility to do anything about it. So that really narrows things down, because the reality is that students, disclose, personal information like this to, an RA, who's in their dorm, or a trainer if they're an athlete, someone who's close to them or a counselor, who may not be someone who is in that category of an official who has the authority to institute corrective measures. And they know this, and so it's intentionally designed to shield the harassers and to shield the institution from any responsibility.
I'm still trying to wrap my mind around who would want this and why this is a goal for anybody. Linda, we're talking to Linda Carrera. She is a Title IX litigator and has for many years helped those who have come under assault physically and verbally for decades. And I am wondering, Linda, as it is, the likelihood of a sexual assault attack, they're not eager to even make the report in the first place. My guess is this will really have an effect on that, and obviously a negative impact for those who already are hesitant to come forward, won't it?
I think that's right. I think it's going to have a chilling effect. And, as I said, the schools won't have to do anything unless the student makes a formal complaint. And, in fact, the student won't be able to get any supportive measures for, changing a classroom or changing a dorm, that sort of thing, unless they file a formal complaint. Presumably, if these rules are adopted, schools will have to come up with revisions to their policies that will reflect all of this, and students will get the message, from that. It's going to be harder for them to go through the process if they report. And if they do report, they're also going to be subjected to required cross-examination by a representative for the harasser, which will be very different and potentially further traumatize the survivor with humiliating questions and all of that. So it's
Go ahead. I'm wondering if you would mind sticking with us through a break and a news break. I know that I have more questions, and perhaps our listeners do as well. We are talking to Linda Correa. She is a Title IX litigator and has extensive experience advocating for employees who have faced discrimination or retaliation in state and federal courts for over 24 years. And I know that there are a lot of parents who are, you know, have questions in regards to their kids, whether they're boys or girls. So if you wouldn't mind, Linda, do you have time to hang out with us a little longer?
You bet.
We'll take a break here. If you have any thoughts, 312-981-7200, we would love to hear from you. And maybe you don't agree with this. Maybe you prefer that that Betsy DeVos's Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos's policies do go through as a policy on campuses to make it harder to make claims and charges filed against those who attack women. And this is, I'm guessing this is not just for women, but of course we're talking about Title IX. 312-981-7200. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Where I come from isn't all that great. My automobile is a piece of crap. My fashion sense is a little whack, and my friends are just as creepy as me. I didn't go to boys'
Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos has proposed Title IX rules that roll back some protections for the victims of sexual assault and harassment. Joining us on the line is a Title IX litigator, Linda Correa. And Linda, I want to let you know that joining us in studio, we have a couple guys. Elliot Serrano in studio with us, and we also have Ken Jacobowski joining us. Our producer tonight is Ashley Byhun, and we also have Roger Badish behind the news desk. So all those voices you hear, Linda, I thought I might catch you up a little bit. I know you were listening on hold. We've been talking about these rollbacks of protections, and there are some headlines I've been reading in ways in which these Title IX rules will fail survivors of campus sexual assault. And I know some of our listeners have questions in regards to this. And I know Ken came in going, I don't understand. Go ahead, Ken. What did you want to say?
I just, why do this to a system that isn't broke? So here's the hypothetical. So I know at the University of Michigan, the athletes usually stay in South Quad. And I believe they split up the men from the women in terms of floors, but I'm not positive. But let's say, I apologize to all the athletes out there who are not picking on you, but let's just say a male athlete sexually assaulted a female athlete. They happen to both live in South Quad. What does the female athlete have to do? Does she now have to go into court to get an order of protection to try to get the guy removed instead of going to her dorm? The dorm person, you know, someone in charge of the dorm who makes room assignments? I mean, it just sounds crazy.
Unfortunately, you might be right. I mean, these rules to go through the Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education or just to try to do something internally at the school would say that the school doesn't have to move the survivor out of the dorm if it would be too burdensome for the assailant.
The assailant?
It doesn't have to move her out and doesn't have to move him out if it would be too burdensome for him. So she's the one who has to rearrange her life and find someplace else to live if she's not comfortable being there with someone who raped her or something like that.
This is like 1850s America.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
This makes no sense on any level.
Well, and you were saying before, Linda, that there weren't like campuses saying it was a burden to them. So this is coming from a small faction, some special interests who, for whatever reason, feel as though they're coming under attack. They're afraid of saying the wrong thing in front of a woman or tired of no means no, I guess. Is that what we're supposed to believe? Linda?
You know, you don't have to be afraid of saying the wrong thing in front of a woman if the wrong thing is the kind of vile and disgusting stuff that anybody that has any manners should understand shouldn't be said. So it really is an overreaction, but unfortunately, you know, this is a department secretary who came in literally saying she was going to rein in the Office of Civil Rights, and this is what we've got.
Do you ever try to put yourself in the mind of Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos and go, okay, is this because you figure, well, I had to put up with it, so why should it be easier for anybody else? I mean, what could it possibly be? What could be her, you know, sort of modus operandi in this situation?
I think.
I feel like you've tried figuring it out. Yeah.
You're really going to get me in trouble.
No, I don't want to get you in trouble. I mean, let's not do that.
No, I think her reality is very divorced from what most people experience in college or any private, any public institution. You know, she had an upbringing in private institutions, and she's had a very different focus in terms of education. So, you know, I don't know what goes through her mind, but, you know, when she's talking about rolling things back in a way that really undermines. I mean, there's a huge number of people who have put a lot of energy into coming up with better ways to handle these sexual misconduct concerns on college campuses all across the country for a long time, and to just roll all of that back like this is without a lot of thought, without data, without studies by experts that this is what is needed, really is just so wrong-headed. And it's crazy because this is an administration that says that they don't want government in your business, and yet here's the government coming in and, you know, taking a wrecking ball to what's been happening without any real thought behind it.
There is so much that needs fixing and needs the Secretary of Education's attention from an education perspective. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Why would you dedicate part of your brain and your limited time to this when you need to be fixing so many other things having to do with educating people?
Well, here's a listener has a question in regards to perhaps it's about cost. Hi, Patty. I'm retired, and I teach one class part-time at a local community college. I have to spend a great deal of time in Title IX training at the expense of the taxpayer. I'm not a Betsy DeVos fan, and I certainly don't support harassment, but I do wonder if institutions have the resources to support every new piece of legislation that comes along. It's amazing how many people want all of these great programs, which I believe Title IX is one of, but nobody wants to pay for them. Everyone believes these programs are free, and they are not. Do you have any thoughts on that one, Linda?
The kind of training that the listener is probably listening to is, you know, something that is online and is not very effective and is expensive unnecessarily, unfortunately. But as far as implementing every new legislation that comes along, this has been Title IX has been the law since 1972. And the law is that, you know, students should be able to attend school free of sex discrimination. And so the focus really is on making sure that if someone is assaulted on campus, their education is not derailed. That should be the focus. And, you know, college admissions offices are all about, you know, all kinds of things that they look at. Students spend tons of time putting together their college essays about what great character they have and all their lofty goals for their lives and how smart they are and all of that. And they spend a lot of time going through that process. They put a lot of resources into that and recruiting students and everything that goes along with that. And they decide who's going to be on their campus and who isn't. And so this is an area where they're going to treat students differently based on their sex. And just for sexual misconduct cases, say, but we're going to do this a little differently. We think that you should have these heightened burdens if there's a problem along those lines. And that really just isn't fair, and it's not what's called for if you're really focused on education.
So going to back to the listener's question and focusing just on cost, do you know, is there an excess burden from a cost perspective? Has that been shown as part of the rules process? Have people demonstrated in support of the change that this is unduly burdensome to the universities and to the colleges and the community colleges from a cost perspective?
I haven't seen that, and that wasn't part of what the department put up in the proposed rulemaking.
So they really didn't talk about cost at all.
I don't think so.
I haven't seen anything to lead anyone to believe that that cost had anything to do with these decisions. Linda, I was also wondering then, you know, if this is something that's happening on college campuses, do you think this will be reflected in a broader sense throughout our culture? Like, you know, will this spread to corporations and other organizations, this kind of thinking?
No, I really don't think so. I mean, with the Me Too movement and, you know, even before the Me Too movement, corporate America really is getting it in the last few years. They have really come around. They're holding employees who sexually assault or sexually harass other employees. They're holding them accountable, and they're getting rid of them. And they're saying, we don't want you to work here if this is the way you're going to behave. So I think that is changing in a huge way. And this is going in the opposite direction. And I'm hopeful that some colleges will resist this completely wrong-headed approach if the department on its own doesn't decide to withdraw these proposed rules.
Is there anything that our listeners can do? Is there anything that people can do to sort of slow this down or, you know, have any effect on this being implemented on college campuses?
Well, there are lots of online resources out there to advocate for better awareness of students' rights under Title IX. The comment period closed on these proposed rules, but you know, keep advocating to you know, members of Congress or to people in your state who are interested in these issues, and to your colleges, and make them continue to have smart policies on campus.
Well, I think that that's something that people should be aware of, and I so appreciate your time with us and for all the work that you've done for those who probably many times didn't know where to turn for help, and all the litigation that you've done advocating for women on college campuses and in the workplace. I want to thank you for all of that, and I hope that you hear the thank you. I hope that you get thank you'd enough.
Oh, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And, of course, my mom's listening going, I told you should have been a lawyer. This is what I wanted to do, civil rights law. So that's another reason why I thank you on behalf of my mom. Thank you for doing what I couldn't.
Wow. Okay.
Appreciate it. We would love to have you on again sometime as we continue to have these conversations. Do you mind if I call back? I mean, I'll let you know ahead of time. I won't just randomly call you.
Sure. That'd be great.
Awesome. Have a great weekend, Linda.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. That was Linda Correa. She's a Title IX litigator and has advocated for over 24 years for those who have faced discrimination or retaliation in state and federal courts. Let's take a break here. More when we come back on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and we like mixing it up. Sometimes we'll do some serious stuff, you know, some things that are important, and then we have fun things that are also perhaps important in other ways. And joining me in studio is our chief geek officer, Elliot Serrano. He's an expert on puppies, kittens, and comic books. That's what I've decided, Elliot.
And in that order.
No, I think kittens. I mean,
kittens, puppies, comic books.
Kittens. Well,
although comics, cats, and canines.
Oh.
How's that?
Sounds like a tongue twister.
There you go.
All right.
FYI.
Yes.
Someone else made me the manager, or no, the director of education.
Is so it my fault? Were they
no,
here?
No, I don't know. Maybe they were listening to the show, but I was quoted as being the director. I was like, wow, I'm getting promotions everywhere.
He is the manager of
community programs.
Community programs at the Anti-Cruelty Society.
Correct. As well as the the face behind Geek to Me.
As well as the papa to Sinbad the Survivor.
Sinbad the Survivor,
world famous cat.
Yeah.
And his Instagram account has more followers than you and I will ever hope to have.
Actually, I finally have more followers than Sinbad.
Oh, not the competition.
I don't know. No, although he has way more Facebook friends than I do.
All right.
He's got one of those famous cat pages.
Well, Roger, by the way, mentioned something when I came in tonight.
I'm looking it up right now.
He wanted to know if you were familiar with a situation in the suburbs, by the way.
Suburban Chicago comic book store owner holds contest giveaway store.
I know Carmelo. I know.
See, he knows what I'm talking about.
And are you going to try to enter this contest?
Okay, so a 500 word essay.
Everyone has asked me this. First, I know Carmelo. Carmelo's a friend.
You're good.
I remember when he announced that he has a shop in Oak Lawn,
right?
Or is Oakbrook?
Oaklawn, I think.
Oaklawn. Yeah. It's a shop that he himself admits he hasn't been able to give the attention. He runs Chimera Comics. It's a couple. I go to Chimera Comics in LaGrange. That's the one that I go to. He has that shop, too. Also run by Stephen Brown, who's another friend of mine, and I'm from the Caffeinated Comics podcast that I've been on that show from time to time. But anyway, so when Carmelo announced, he had this idea. He wanted to just give his shop away. We're talking he was giving away the shop, the inventory, the client base, and all the contacts that went with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was it wasn't even like you didn't have to pay any. You only had to pay the application fee,
right?
To be able to go in, so that way he's not flooded with 10,000 people just wasting time.
Right. And I'm sitting here trying to figure out how that works from a tax perspective.
I know, having
been a business
owner. That's the problem.
That's the thing. That's a big thing. That is one big thing. But consider this. If you want to be a comic shop owner.
Oh, this is a great opportunity.
It's a huge opportunity because you're spared having to find the rental property, having to accumulate the stock to be in the shop. And then on top of that, again, the client base, the people who come to the shop. Because comic shop owners will spend years developing that client base, people who come in regularly to buy from you. So it's all there for the taking. And yes, so the moment he announced that, people were asking me. They were sending me links to the bit. I'm like, guys, I knew this the moment it happened. I'm going to tell you right now, there was a time when I would have liked to have been a comic shop owner. I remember my dad and I, this is before my dad passed away, he even said, Elliot, would you like to, maybe we should open a comic shop one day. Mm-hmm. And this was when I was still in high school. And we thought about it. And then I'm like, nah, because there is just so much that goes into it. There's so much work. And let's face it, these types of businesses, comic shops, I mean, we talk about, everyone's loving comic books because of the movies and all that. But the reality is that for all the success that the movies have, that's not reflecting in the comic business.
So comic shops.
Very tough. I've also known several comic store owners, if you remember way back in the day, Moondogs.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember Moondogs.
And they had a chain and they just started falling apart one by one by one. And you're right. I've talked to enough of the comic store owners that they just can't maintain a business. They're barely breaking even at that, because again, the stock, to maintain that and hold on to it and not really sell it all and make your money back is extremely difficult in this day and age.
Consider this, running a comic shop would be like being an independent record store owner with records coming out every week. And then you have to figure out what records you're going to buy, which ones you're going to sell, and so on.
I want to own a bar. More after this at 710 WGN.